Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it locked. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne, a lyrical analysis of Kanye West. My name's Chris Lambert, and today we are doing a story with Chris Mensch. Chris, thanks for coming on. Introduce yourself to everybody.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Mensch. I am the news editor at Genius. Formerly have written for places like Complex, XXL, Pigeons and Planes. Been a big Kanye West fan for a long time. Very excited to be here.
Nice. When did you first start listening to Kanye's music, or when do you first remember hearing a Kanye West song?
So I had definitely been plugged into like his hits from his early albums over the years, you know, whether it was Gold Digger or, you know, any of those things. But I do have a very specific memory of like actually getting into him, which was I used to work at this like camp in like upstate New York. And we were like, it was like the staff day off or whatever. And one of the kids was playing Graduation in like the van, and we were driving up to like Lake Placid. And I remember just like, I had been into Kanye kind of, but like that was when I was like 14 at the time, I think. And it really like just really clicked for me. And like everything just made sense. It was like, oh my God, like why don't I love this person? You know what I mean? Like, why am I not like paying attention to everything that he does? And so that was like the first album that I remember really like resonating with me. And then once 808s and Heartbreak came out, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of that album. And that really sort of like shifted perspectives for me on music and things in general. So sort of became a whole thing from there. And then I was hooked.
Was, you know, 808s at the time was a pretty controversial album, from fan reaction to critical reaction. For you, really having just started to connect to Kanye's music and hearing this album, and as you said, having it be this kind of tipping point, turning point experience for you, were you aware of a lot of the flack the album was getting at the time? Were your friends equally as into it, or were you just kind of like, I like this album and I don't know if anybody else does?
I would say my friends were into it. I definitely remember it being sort of like controversially received. And I know that just having listened to it, I know that it sounded a lot different than most other things that I was listening to. And even like my local newspaper in New Jersey, the Star Ledger, wrote something about it, I think it was in their end of year roundup thing, but it was like, you know, like Kanye, like really pushed the envelope and changed whatever. And I just like remember reading this and being like, why is the Star Ledger writing about this? Like, clearly this is like something that's like resonated beyond just like hip hop fans. So to me, it always just made sense. And I also became a huge Kid Cudi fan as well after that. And so then Man on the Moon dropped, and that all sort of like was something that really, really drew me into wanting to write about music and share music with people. So I always liked it, but I know that at the time people had more mixed feelings. I think in hindsight, the view on the album is a lot better than maybe it was when it first came out.
Yeah, right. It's definitely caught a lot of shine over the years. That it didn't have initially when it came out. Like I was in college when it came out, and I just remember everybody at my college just being like, meh, shitty. Like, I liked Graduation, but like, this is garbage. And me being like, oh, I kind of like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really just was so different, not only for music in general, but also just for him, you know. And you come off Graduation and you've got these big like stadium raps and just big, big tracks. And then 808s is so stripped down and so different. And his first non-school themed album and everything like that. I think people just didn't really know what to make of it at first.
Yeah. Were you listening to a lot of hip hop at that time, or was Kanye an outlier in your listening experience?
I grew into being like a huge hip hop fan. Like I said, with Kanye was one of my early people. I loved Kid Cudi. I loved a lot of people like that. But, you know, like old Jay-Z and things like that. Hip hop was always like part of it. But Kanye was one of the artists that really, really like engaged me and made me really really just like want to explore hip hop more deeply, I think.
I know that experience very well. And then when did you first have that kind of, you mentioned that listening to 808s and then Kid Cudi got you into more sharing music and wanting to write and discuss about music. Do you remember when that thought kind of coalesced, like, oh, I can do this professionally and I want to do this professionally?
Well, I actually, I guess that was in high school. I wrote for like my high school newspaper, and we had like a arts section of it, that I became the editor of. So I've always loved the idea of like writing reviews and things like that. I've always loved journalism. I was like the kid that was always making people mix CDs with like, you know, the little artwork with Sharpie across it. And I would send, give them to literally all of my friends had mixed CDs for me from high school. So music was always something I loved and journalism was always something I loved. And from high school, I realized that I really liked both of those things. I think it took me through college to like really realize I actually could do it as a job. I sort of like had applied to like some internships on a whim, and managed to get one at XXL when I was in college. And that sort of like really put me on the path of really wanting to pursue it. But it was always kind of there as something I really loved doing.
Mm. Did that change your relationship with Kanye's music at all? Getting into that professional realm of discussing music, consuming music, being in touch with the zeitgeist of what the conversations were around music?
I don't know if it changed my perspective on Kanye compared to other artists, but I will say obviously it just changed my perspective on music in terms of, you know, you see how like what they say, like how the sausage is made or whatever, you know, realizing the inner workings of the music industry will always change people's perspective on things a little bit, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. Like it was different being on each side of the Subway counter, right? When I was making Subway sandwiches or even doing the prep in the back versus just ordering them.
Yeah, exactly.
Evan, have you gotten to write a lot about Kanye over the years?
Yeah, so the first time I was like working as a journalist, I was freelancing, I think, when The Life of Pablo came out. So I did some news coverage around that. And then obviously these last two albums, I've been the news editor at Genius for that. So that was pretty huge. We were writing about it quite a bit, obviously, over the course of the rollout of his album and the Kitsy Ghost album and all the other good music stuff. So I did get to write quite a bit about it over the past couple months.
And was that Genius experience very different? Because I know from just a user of Genius, like so much of this podcast and the research is around Genius. And people look at it for depth and detail, not just necessarily reporting or not just a take. Has that approach on the Genius end of things and framing through the Genius perspective, how's that been in regards to Kanye?
I think it's definitely a lot of fun. I think it's different because, yeah, like you said, other outlets are maybe more focused on, you know, opinions or think pieces or things like that, which are also great. You know, that's definitely an important part of the media landscape as a whole. But Genius really doesn't publish anything opinion based. And we're very like more like detail oriented, looking into the, you know, the individual things and figuring out like why certain artists or like why he did sampled something in one way or why he said something and how that relates to one of his old songs. And so that was it's a lot of fun for me because you really get to sort of like nerd out on the song pages and look up, you know, like, what does this sample mean? Like, you know, like when they sample Nirvana on Cudi montage and you're like, oh, well, this connects to Cudi's love of Kurt Cobain, which goes back like years and years and years. Or when Kanye was rapping about like the Audi home on Reborn and you're like, oh, well, he also rapped about that on Crack Music. And so you get to make those connections and they're weird little things, but it's very like gratifying, you know? And it also gives us a perspective that's maybe a little bit different than you get at other outlets. So I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, other outlets, there's so much concern over the macro. And it seems like with Genius, there's a lot more concern over the micro, that nuance.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to put it. We're really like about taking the micro and bringing it to the masses, or I guess the macro level. But yeah, a lot of our content does center around those little things, and seeing how those little things, what they say about a larger theme or a larger trend, and sort of extrapolating those things outwards based on facts and trivia and stuff like that, which like I said, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you find that your opinions on an album, especially these last few Kanye albums, have changed since you've worked with Genius, or have kind of adjust as you dive into them in this more nuanced way?
I think particularly for an artist like Kanye, it just makes you really appreciate his artistry, because there's so much depth to the beats, especially. And, you know, finding where are these old samples from, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, I found it's from this song, but like, this song's not even on Spotify. It's not, you know, so like figuring out, like, well, I don't know where he's getting all these things from. Like, I think that when they said, I remember reading an interview with the guy who deals with like the catalog for Louis Prima or Prima, however you say it, that he sampled on Fourth Dimension. And he was like, no one has ever asked to sample this before in the entire time I've worked here. So so that it just makes you appreciate, like, wow, like he really must be digging through things to find some of this stuff. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, it adds like a layer of understanding that maybe a more common listener might not have, just because they wouldn't be looking for that more nuanced understanding. But it also raises so many more questions about, just as you said, like, how did he find this sample? Like, what was going on? Like, did he have, you know, a lot of the song crafted and just found this? Is this what created the song? Like, just engenders so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you wonder sometimes, did he start from, like you said, did he start from this and work outwards? Did he chop this in at the end? You know, when you're working with so many different elements like that, it's interesting to see.
Has there been one thing that's maybe surprised you more than something else, or kind of your favorite tidbit that you've discovered in looking up more of the details of recent albums?
I think something that's come to light over the past few albums, or these past two albums, that has maybe always been there, but maybe wasn't as widely reported, was just how sort of like all over the place the whole creative process is, and how things kind of just come together at the last minute, but yet still are often pretty amazing. So I find that really interesting. You know, when 07 O'Shake, for example, is saying things like, we cut the vocals for her song the day before the album came out, and it's still like one of the highlights of the project, and you're like wow, like how did this come together so quickly, and yet it's still so interesting. I think that was pretty evident over the last album cycle, but maybe shed some light on his working process in general, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, it seems like those details have maybe been there for a while. It's just in this day and age we know more about them. Like, hearing about Yeezus and kind of the rush that it was to put Yeezus together in the last kind of like 3 weeks, and even in the last hours before the album had to go off, it makes you wonder if we had the social media or even the media coverage today that we didn't even have back in 2013, what would the perception of that album be in the wake of all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Yeezus is another great example of that. And even like, I remember Swizz Beatz was saying that the vocal skip on So Appalled is like one of those things that's bothered him from, you know, from My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, is something that's bothered him forever. And it was like, because he recorded it at the last minute, but we didn't notice because the album turned out great, you know, like, but you're right. Maybe those kinds of details would have been more, people would have known about them more had the way media and reporting is today, if it was maybe more like that back then, but you never know.
Right. it makes me think, was it the story with the College Dropout that it leaked 2 weeks or something before it came out, and then Kanye just went back in the studio and added a whole bunch of shit, like changed songs around, and the leaked version ended up like still resembling but was clearly inferior to the actual version that came out?
Yeah, I remember something about that.
That man just likes to work to the 12th hour.
Some people thrive under pressure, right?
Yeah, where I don't know if I do so because I thrive under pressure, or more so just laziness and being like, this is just how everything happens.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the thing. Procrastinators always say that they thrive under pressure, but really they have to get it done, you know? So I don't know if they actually took the time, if they might have come up with something better, but...
Right, that was something that Kanye said too about My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, that it was the first time that he ever wrote lines and like wrote them out rather than just kind of memorizing them and saying them over and over, but actually had them written down and could look over them. And it's just like, as writers, that seems so astounding to me to not write it down.
Yeah, that's always amazing to me. You know, when people, and you see the similar things with like Jay-Z or Lil Wayne, and they're talking about some of their best songs, and they're like, I didn't even write that, I freestyled it. And I'm like, oh, okay, like, cool. I know for me, I'm so nervous putting anything out that I write, I go over it like 1,000 times, so.
Right, like, how many hours have you spent just pained over one paragraph or even one sentence? You're just like, I could move this clause to the beginning, or...
Yeah, it's tough, man. And it's especially, you know, because I'm the news editor, so I do a lot of like quick turnaround articles. And so you're trying to find that balance of like, okay, well, I need to get, you know, we want to get things out quickly so you're not like way behind everybody else. But also, like, you want to make sure it's substantive and you want to make sure that it's saying something cool and you want to triple check all of your facts and everything like that. And I think that the way media is now, you know, with everything being so fast paced, you have to make sure that you maintain that balance. But you know, at the end of the day, eventually you have to let things go and let them live in the world. So,
yeah. Do you take any, comfort or solace from Kanye's process of just working at the last minute, like having this idea, doing it at the best way that you can in that time frame and letting it go?
Yeah. Well, as we learn from him, you can always keep updating it, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, release this news article. It's just like one paragraph, two paragraphs, and then go back through and like, hey, look, it's seven now.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to do things like that. But, you know, as more information, you're only working with the information that you have or the things that you can have at that point. So when new information comes to light, always good to go back and be like, okay, well, this is what it actually turned out being. You know, sometimes you write things and it's like, well, this is what it could be. And then you're like, okay, well, we figured it out. You know,
this is what it was. So you were big into 808s, and then My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy comes out.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nordfiliale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Were you listening to all of the Good Friday releases coming up to that, or leading up to
yes.
the release?
Yeah, I remember downloading each one like every week from the website or whatever, putting the MP3s on my iPod and listening to them at school. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the process, wasn't it? Like, thank goodness I have this iPod.
It was such a process. Now we're all so lazy. It's just like you pull it up on your phone. But it's sad. I wish that some of those things were up on streaming services because, you know, songs like Christian Dior Denim Flow is like one of my favorite Kanye songs of all time. And it's still like such a pain to listen to. You have to like find it on YouTube, or you have to like, yeah, like go back and MP3 download it from somewhere. It's very annoying.
It's kind of crazy. Like, we think we're at the, not the peak of the internet, obviously, but such a... like a better version of the internet where all this music is available, all these things you can just get at a touch. Like, try finding Christian Dior Denim Flow or some of the Good Friday tracks. Try finding even the Blueprint 3 that not off not on Tidal, and it's a struggle.
It's tough, man, and it's sort of a symptom of that era of music, you know, because that was also like the free mixtape era, which has sort of subsided. I know SoundCloud is still a big thing, but obviously it's not quite like the Dat Piff era like it used to be. But so much of that stuff is still sort of like trapped in this format and kind of like in this like weird gray area where it can't really go on Spotify because like some of the stuff wasn't clear or some of it wasn't, you know, officially signed off on or whatever. So it's tough because that's such a great era of hip hop in general. And that's kind of a lot of the stuff that I grew up listening to. And now it's like, you know, you can still download the things, but it's not really, hasn't really translated over to the new formats yet, which is, I guess, can be frustrating for me sometimes, but.
Yeah. It feels almost like non-canon. Like it's music that exists, but not music that exists in the accepted form of things. Almost like a Star Wars, like, novel that's not part of the movies, right?
yeah, exactly. And for some of the artists, it's some of their best stuff too, you know? So it's sad, like, why is Wiz's Cushion OJ not on Spotify yet? Things like that. Like, it's like, this is your best music and I really want to listen to it. And it's tough that it's not as accessible, but, you know, it's also was a transitionary time in the music industry, so.
So My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy finally comes out, and was it a lot of fans point to it as their favorite Kanye album, like the seminal moments. I think I've spoken to very few that are just like, oh, it was another album. What were your thoughts on it when you finally heard it?
I think it's a really, really great album. I think it's probably the most like polished album, or like if I had to say like what I think the best Kanye album would be, I would probably say My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. I wouldn't necessarily call it my personal favorite. Mm-hmm. But the attention to detail and the, you know, the all the production work and the raps and the theming, everything like that, I think was really on point. So
yeah. And well, and the conversation around that album, I mean, the conversation around every Kanye album's pretty fascinating. But in the wake of everything with Taylor Swift and that album having the impact that it had and the praise that it had, at this point, were you a fan of Kanye as a person, or was it more just about the music and you were paying much attention to him?
I always tend to put the music over everything in terms of like artists that I like the most, you know? I do. I mean, like, I've always liked Kanye as a person. I always think that he'll say things that other people are afraid to say, sometimes to a fault, you know, but, yeah, I mean, I just think in that particular case, it was really interesting because Kanye's, penchant for saying things like that had gotten him in trouble with the Taylor Swift stuff. And it was sort of like, you know, he was always going to be popular, but it was a bit of like a do or die moment. Like he really needed to deliver something really fantastic. To, you know, to overcome this whole PR cycle and things like that, that had really been the main topic of conversation. And it was remarkably pretty effective, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah. The fact that people just kind of welcome back with open arms, it seems each controversial thing he does, it might be the end of him. And then something happens and people are like, Kanye. I kind of think if the Taylor Swift thing had happened today, that it wouldn't be as big of a deal as it was back then.
Yeah, it was such like a cultural moment. And that was like the VMAs at the height of their popularity right around then as well. It was really just it was a crazy time, that's for sure.
My favorite kind of detail about that thing was that a few months earlier at the European Video Music Awards, Kanye had crashed the stage when Justice won. And nobody, like, people applauded him. And he, I think, maybe got a little bit of flack for it. But, like, the crowd was into it. Like, the hosts were kind of laughing about it. There was no negative backlash from him doing the same thing that time and saying, like, hey, I haven't watched your video. I'm happy for you. But, like, I spent $1 million. Like, I think my video is the best. And then to go up and do the Taylor Swift moment and have the complete opposite reaction.
Yeah, yeah, it did not quite work out for him in the same way.
No, poor guy. And then Yeezus comes out, and when Yeezus is coming out, where are you at that time?
What year is that? 2013. So I was in college when Yeezus came out. And so at that point I was very into hip hop music. I was, right around when I interned at XXL, for the first time. Actually, I think it came out while I was interning there, 'cause I remember everyone talking about it and being like, again, unsure what to make of it, sort of like 808s and Heartbreak. But again, I think that that's another really genre pushing moment for him. I know that people have criticized some of it, like some of the very minimal sound and stuff like that. But I think that that's another thing that's increasingly proving to be influential. So
it just, the soundscape is being like 808s, the soundscape there ended up, I mean, people always point to Cudi, Drake, so many artists that we have today owe their careers, which might be an over-dramatization of it, but their careers to that album. Do you think that Yeezus has had quite that impact, or just maybe influenced some of the soundscapes less so than giving us artists that were born from that?
Yeah, I don't think that it's been quite an 808's level of impact. And also, you know, when you talk about the influence of 808's, it was one of a group of albums and artists that were influencing things. Because you also, when you talk about like the innovations in terms of like auto-tune, you have to talk about T-Pain as well, and there's other factors at play. But obviously, when someone of Kanye's stature does something as big as that, it's going to have an impact. So in terms of Yeezus, like I said, I don't know if it's a 808's level situation, I definitely think that the like whole minimalist aesthetic and some of the more industrial sounds and stuff like that have started to pop up other places as well.
You talking about the use of autotune in the various like T-Pain and Kanye in that period, it just made me think about Jay-Z dropping the track Death of Autotune.
Yeah, didn't turn out to quite be true, but
no, right? It was such a bold, maybe that's why like Blueprint 3 has been buried. Jay-Z's like, oh shit, I was wrong, like nobody can listen to this now.
I think that it was just at the time people still thought that it was a gimmick, you know, and I think that people hadn't figured out people are just figuring out ways to use it in more artistic fashions, you know. So, and there was at one point where everybody was just auto-tuning everything, you know, like random rappers you never thought would use it were auto-tuning random parts of. It was a time where people were kind of figuring out the tools, you know, a little bit. So I could see why he viewed it as like maybe like a fad, but obviously it turned out to not quite be the case.
Yeah, at the time that the song came out, it did seem like a statement that somebody needed to make. But the longevity of 808s and then the rise of Cudi and just that sound, not that they use a lot of auto-tune, but just, I don't know, it didn't feel as necessary afterwards. As you said, like more people got more refined with it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. They learned how to use it differently. And it's become such a staple, obviously, now in music. So I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Well, so you're at XXL at that time, and you're hearing a lot of the Kanye conversation or the conversations surrounding Kanye in a way that you probably never had before. Do you remember anything jumping out to you in that time about how other people viewed him or your own views on him in relation to these conversations?
Like I said, I just remember people being like very split opinions about Yeezus as a project and it being so, so, so different from what had come out with, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And I remember the staffers just sort of being like, not quite sure what to make of it. I mean, obviously I was still an intern at that time, so I wasn't like super plugged in with everybody. But I definitely remember there being some confusion around it as a whole.
And was your opinion also kind of mixed at that time, or was it more like you would have wanted to say, like, hey, no, this is good, like, I'll stop, you should all stop being confused?
I mean, I always thought it was cool, but again, you know, it's easy for me to be like, I loved it when it first came out, now that, like, we're a few years removed and people still think that, you know? I'm sure that at the time I was a little taken aback by it as well, but, you know, like I said, like, my experience with Kanye, I wasn't, like, the college dropout kid from the beginning, you know what I mean? So my experience with him has always been changing styles and changing albums, you know, from release to release. So for me, when he does something crazy, it's not as maybe as surprising as somebody who got three albums of, you know, obviously he evolved throughout his first couple of releases, but that's, you know, people view as the old Kanye, right? Those first three albums. And then I maybe got plugged in more when he became the superstar Kanye that was doing all sorts of weird things every different album. So I guess it just maybe wasn't as surprising to me.
That's a really good point to me, because I'm in the same boat as you are, where I had heard things leading up to 808s, but 808s was kind of the album that I first really, really connected with. And then moving forward, I was just really into everything that he was doing as part of the soundscape change. And I wonder, like, I wish the University of Chicago would have somebody do a large scale study of, like, when somebody became a Kanye fan, and if there's any correlation to that and hesitancy at some of the newer albums.
Yeah, it certainly could be true. And that's, like, a phenomenon I think you see with music in general. Rappers always say that, like, nostalgia is, like, their enemy in some way, because it's not necessarily that people only like a certain style of the rapper. It's just that they like where they associate that music with good memories, you know, and where they were at that time in their life. And maybe that came out when they were in college and they were having a lot of fun, and now they work all the time and are not doing fun things or whatever, you know? So I think that that's beyond just Kanye. That's a larger phenomenon in music, where people get hung up on certain eras in their own life and the music that they associate with that. And it's reflected in their fandom of an artist in a way that isn't necessarily connected to the quality of the music. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's such a dynamic, because how much is that, and how much then is just the quality? Like, if I'm going through Eminem's discography, how much is quality versus how much is my nostalgia from when these albums came out, to where, like, I'm not really paying attention when Relapse happens, so then I listen to Relapse and there's no nostalgia.
Yeah, that's fair. And to be on the flip side, obviously, some artists just release good music and then stop releasing good music. So it's not a one-for-one thing. But I do think that sometimes people let their objective judgment be clouded by their own life experiences, which, you know, music at the end of the day is a very emotional listening experience, so it makes sense to me. But it's just something I think everyone should be, like, cognizant of.
Yeah. How do we get them to be aware of that?
I don't know if we ever will. Judging by the comment sections of my articles, I'm not sure we will.
Well, yeah, that gets at a question I was thinking about and wanting to ask. So, great transition, Chris. When you started writing more articles covering Kanye and writing about Kanye, the comments section is always such a shit show. And then getting to see the responses on social media via Twitter, what has your experience been with that?
I think it's definitely interesting, and being so plugged in with Genius and with all the users on the site who are fans of certain artists and annotate things, and, you know, they fight back and forth over what lyrics mean and things like that. You can definitely see how opinions change, and how some people are ride or die forever, some people are, they only prefer the old stuff, some people, you know, the different opinions come out a lot, because you're interacting directly with a lot of people who are fans. And it's been really interesting to see. It's always sad to me when people used to love an artist and don't anymore. But it's also, I guess, sort of a natural evolution.
Yeah. Man, this cycle leading up to Ye, it was such a, such a down point for a lot of Kanye fans, and for reasons I completely understand. It was rough for us who are more in the ride or die vein of things, just covering it and talking about it and having those conversations. But there were a few people that had done stories, and in the wake of all of Kanye's Trump comments, the TMZ interview, that they just have no interest in him anymore. No malice, but just no interest. It's like their fandom's been cauterized, which, man, that sucks.
It's sad. It is. I mean, I certainly understand where they're coming from. For me, like, I am going to continue to have to be covering all artists, you know? So, like, I can't quote unquote cancel anyone, because I just like have to report on them for my job, you know? But I mean, I do definitely understand how people view what he's been doing recently as sort of not aligning really at all with the messages that he's been spreading throughout his earlier work. So,
and how much of the job that you're doing now is just focused on the music that comes out versus being focused on all the antics, isn't the right word, but all the happenings around the album?
Well, so luckily for me, we don't cover things that aren't music related. So that's a very like strict editorial thing that we've chosen to do, is we really only cover music stuff. Obviously, the real life comes into play in relation to the music. So I've been paying attention to everything, obviously, but some of the things that are tangentially related to music, we just don't have to write about, which I personally am thankful for. But also someone like Kanye, who's also very heavily involved in the fashion world and things like that, you know, that's increasingly become a big part of his interviews. And that's just something that we don't write about unless it has to do with like something that he said on one of his songs. So luckily, most all of my attention has been focused on the music and the music side of things. But obviously, with the last album rollout, some of these things really coalesced together, you know, and controversial comments that he was making bled over into reception of the album or in terms of his interactions with other artists. And so that then becomes something where it's the more of the realm of what we would cover.
It's pretty fascinating to see, like, reading all the reviews, reading interaction, how much critics would shape a review over the external stuff. And not even saying, like, you know, they just said it's a bad album because of the external stuff, but reading a critic saying that "I Thought About Killing You" is problematic because it doesn't address anything with Trump and his comments with Trump. And just thinking about the perspective of an album based on that kind of stuff, and as you said, the bleeding into of one another.
Yeah, I think the thing that was a little bit complicated about it was that he seemed to make some of those comments, he tied them into his album rollout. So I think that people thought that when the music came out, that it was going to maybe answer some of these questions they had or make them understand his perspective more. And then it didn't, you know, because the album wasn't really political at all. So I think that people were maybe just confused. And so that's where some of that came from. But I also do see what you're saying, that like they heard this and then it's like, okay, well, that's it. The music is over or whatever, you know. So I think it can go in both directions.
Is there a dream article you have in mind about Kanye that you haven't gotten to write yet, or a topic regarding Kanye that you want to write about, but it hasn't been the right confluence of elements yet?
That's a great question. I would love to do like a deep dive into the whole making of 808s and Heartbreak for like an anniversary or something like that. But in terms of, I did actually get to write something that I had been wanting to write for a really, really long time. Which was when Kids See Ghosts came out, I talked about how I wrote a whole feature piece about how it was basically this like very like poetic full circle moment for Kanye's relationship with Kid Cudi, and how, you know, they had obviously influenced each other early on, and then they had a lot of issues and falling out over the years and back and forth to the point where Cudi was like, I wish that Kanye didn't even use my vocals on Yeezus. Like, he didn't even tell me, you know. And then for them to come back and make an album together and have it be, you know, a successful project and sonically cohesive and everything like that, that was a really, really exciting article for me to write, because it was just sort of like a culmination of reasons that I wanted to be a journalist, a music journalist, and it all sort of came together in real life, and so it worked out very well.
Yeah, that sounds like the article. Which just gets into your personal interests, like a lot of the history that you had experienced firsthand just as a fan, and then getting to draw on all of your professional abilities at that point in time to then describe it. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What was your reaction to Kids See Ghosts?
My personal opinion is that it's definitely the better of the two albums. And I think that the reason for that is because there was just more time that went into it, you know? I mean, I know he was working on Ye for a long time, but then he said that he changed a lot of things at the last minute, and I personally felt that that came through in the lyricism, whereas I felt that Kids See Ghosts was more polished and more cohesive in a way. I also thought it was really interesting because it felt to me like Kanye taking a lot of Cudi's ideas and sort of refining them into the sound that maybe Cudi was envisioning. I think that some of people's issues with some of Kid Cudi's work after he left Good Music was that he was very insistent on doing everything on his own. And, you know, his ideas, when you think about something like Speeding Bolt to Heaven, where it's like this grunge rock experiment, but maybe it didn't really sonically come together in the way that he wanted it to. But then when you look at, you can hear some of those same influences on Kids See Ghosts, you know, when I say like the Nirvana sample or other things like that, like you can hear, like, I'm like, there's no way this isn't like Kid Cudi's idea. But I think that Kanye helped shepherd it into something just more, a little more polished and cohesive.
Right. Like that makes a lot of sense to me. As somebody that was an early Cudi fan, getting to some of the recent stuff, I've had that same reaction of like, this is close to being what I want, but just isn't it. Like sonically, lyrically, narratively, but then Kids See Ghosts really does feel like whatever that missing ingredient was, just that little change here, the little detail here, makes it much more the soundscape that I'm looking for from Cudi. And maybe that's selfish as a listener because he's doing what he needs to as an artist, but it just, I connected with it much more than what I had previous projects.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously Kanye was part of that, but also it has to do with some of the other producers that worked on it as well. You know, when you saw like Plain Pat and Dr. Genius and things like that, some of the people who he had maybe gotten separated from a little bit and had kind of come back into the fold, I also think that that helped bring back some of that old school Kid Cudi sound that people have always been chasing after, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I still, when I put on Day and Night, it still feels like a fresh song to me.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Man on the Moon 1 has, I think, aged amazingly. Like, so much of that music sound, like, it sounds so relevant today, and you can see how, you know, it's one of the most, amongst the new class of rappers, is one of the most commonly, like, at least in my experience, seems to be one of the most commonly cited albums as a major influence on them wanting to be a musician or on their style. So I think it's interesting to see how it's played out over the last, I guess it's been like a decade almost. Wow.
I think I remember, because I had read your Kids See Ghosts piece. Was it there a line by Travis Scott saying like Kid Cudi was the reason he wanted to make music?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Travis Scott has said that. ASAP Rocky has said that. Artists like Logic, even like people that you wouldn't think of sometimes. A lot of people have cited Kid Cudi as a big influence. It's very interesting.
It's kind of crazy because like Cudi's musical career isn't what I think anybody thought it would be up to this point. like especially when he and Drake kind of came up together, to see where Drake's at and to see where Cuddy's at, project wise and how people think about them and react to them. But the impact that Cuddy has had on the music industry seems far larger than the impact that Drake has had.
I mean, I think that Drake is very impactful in his own way. But I do think that, yeah, Cuddy has been very protective of his artistry, I think. Maybe to a fault, some would say, because for a while he was kind of going it alone. But I think that that fact has, you know, he's never been someone trying to put out radio hits. You know, he got radio hits off of A Man on the Moon 1. But that, I think we all know that that was never really his goal. And so people really, and, you know, because his subject matter is very personal and, you know, talks about his struggles, mental illness and all these things, I think it's just something that has become sort of like a generational touchstone, you know?
Absolutely. And just, you see the impact how he went about things had on Kanye, had on Travis and ASAP and Logic. That's cool.
Yeah. And honestly, like looking back at Kids He Ghost, I do think that Cuddy also brought out some great rapping out of Kanye too. Like, I think that some of the best rapping that Kanye's done in a long time is on Kids He Ghost, you know, especially when you look at, like the verse on Cuddy Montage or his verse on Reborn or, you know, their stuff together on Fourth Dimension. It's very, very sharp. And I feel like they have this symbiotic relationship now where they inspire each other and they work together really well. So it just was interesting to see.
Yeah, that verse on Reborn, I think that's a track that has been a standout for a lot of people. It was actually, I think I saw a list at Complex or somewhere that was ranking the best Cuddy Kanye collaborations. And I think it was the top 19 or 21. And Cuddy Montage was like third to last. And I was horrified. But Reborn was number one or number two. And I was just like, I think that made more sense to me. Or at least was up there for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kanye's verse on it, it really, I feel like this is, I'm looking at the lyrics now as we're talking. But you know, when he's talking about, just like sort of his mental state and his perspective. And I feel like this verse is something that sort of gives you that window into his mind and where he's at right now that people were sort of craving out of all of these projects. And I mean, like, I don't think it came out overall throughout all the albums as much as people wanted it to. But when you're talking about moments, I think that that was definitely one of them.
Yeah, that string from I was off the meds, off the chain, called insane. Like, I want all the smoke. I want all the rain. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, I want all the rain. I want all the pain. Yeah, I want all the blame. Yeah, it's... It obviously well-executed rapping, and also just it felt like it explained things to me. It felt very relatable to me.
Yeah, that light bulb kind of goes on, and you're like, oh. Oh. Kanye, thank you for sharing. So why don't we get into your favorite Kanye moment? Do you have, like, a moment that is your favorite, like, outside the music, but just him as a person doing things?
This is insanely random, but the, I don't know if this is like my favorite of all time, but this is just something that I thought was so funny recently when he's talking about Lady Gaga. Have you seen that clip where he's talking about Lady Gaga becoming the creative director of Polaroid? It's like, what does she know about cameras? It's like, and for some reason, it's like the funniest thing. And the way he says, he says Lady Gaga super funny. It's like Gaga or something like that. That whole clip is, just always makes me laugh for some reason. It's very random, but that's something that I've been thinking about a lot recently.
That got like revitalized on like our Kanye and Kanye Twitter recently, and it was just so funny to see people like sharing. Like, every time I hear it or every time I see like the gif of it, I can't not laugh.
Yeah, it's funny. It also reminds me of when they were supposed to do a tour together, which I totally forgot about. But the Fame Kills tour it was supposed to be Kanye and Gaga together, which is so weird to think about now. And I know that it didn't end up happening, but, I remember, like, in high school, like, being really excited because I really liked Lady Gaga when she first came out too. And it was like right after her first album, I think they were going to do it. And it just, like, I remember being so excited with my friends and wanting to get tickets, and then it didn't end up happening and it being like a whole thing. So the clip sort of brought me back to that time and reminded me of that as well.
I sometimes think, like, would that have changed what we think about, like, pop music and tour? Because that was kind of an unprecedented thing to see, like, a pop artist like Gaga working with Kanye in that 2010. It was going to be 2011. Or no, it was 2009 that the tour was announced, because it was the VMA moment that killed the tour.
Yeah. I know after the VMAs, I think that they had trouble with ticket sales or something like that. And then it ended up not happening. But yeah, you're right. It would have been, I feel like it could have been up there with like his like Glow in the Dark tour or something like that as like one of his like big iconic tours. But I guess we'll never know. Sad.
Yeah. Like, what collaborations would we have seen from like other artists in the wake of that? What would we have seen, like, the direction of Kanye and Gaga's music go in the wake of them kind of having that time together?
Yeah, like, would we have seen, like, more collaborations between them, like, just musically? It definitely would have been really interesting.
Man, I think they could still do that tour today.
They probably could. I'm sure it would do well.
Fame kills. It's still a fitting title, too. What about top five Kanye tracks?
Okay, this one is going to take me a second. But, let's see. I definitely deeply love Gorgeous off of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. I think that song is just like so perfect. And before Kids See Ghosts, I feel like that was my favorite Kanye and Kid Cudi collaboration. So that's definitely, I don't know if I can do them in like order, but that's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
I really, really love The Glory off of, off of Graduation. I just think that that's like, I love that song.
Yeah. That's a song that I slept on for a long time. And, one of our first stories was a listener, Alex, who lives in the UK, and he was just telling us how much he loved The Glory. And I went back and listened to it, and it was like it finally clicked for me for the first time. I was like, wow, this is an amazing song.
Yeah, and that's such good like sample work by Kanye too, like how he can spin old samples into like catchy things. It works very well for me. I'm a big fan of that song. Okay, so we're going to go with those two. We're going to go with, I have to go with Christian Dior, Denim Flow. I love, 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 love that song. Yes. And it's just, like we said, it's such a tragedy that it's not on a project or not on a, like on streaming services or anything like that. And that's like the height of like Kanye doing all the posse cuts with everybody. Oh, that's a great one.
That's another one. We've done two Kanye West best song tournament deathmatch extreme battles, which are like 128 song brackets. And when we did the second one in December of 2017, that was a song that like so many people were behind. And they're just like, people don't understand the greatness of this track. And I'm kind of hoping like we're going to be doing that bracket every year. And just each year that song gets more and more, I don't know, ears on it than what it had before.
Yeah, it's a good one. And then going back, I also am a huge, huge fan of We Don't Care from The College Dropout. So that's one that's always resonated with me. And even though it was sort of pre my getting really, really deeply into Kanye, it was one of the songs where going back, I was like, oh my God, like, what have I been doing? Like, what have I been missing this whole time? So that's, what is that, four?
Yep.
And then I guess Oh, you know what? Definitely Paranoid off of 808s and Heartbreak. Definitely, definitely that song. I love that song.
The beat on that song, so good.
Yeah, yeah. There's something about that, like, you know, like I said, I love that album, but there's something about the way that song came together that is just, like, to me, like, the perfect, like, example of, like, that era of Kanye and, like, that style and, like, it working out just very well. And it wasn't even, like, a big single off the album, but I think that that's a really, really great song.
Yes, good choice. Solid, solid choice. What about top three albums?
Okay, top three albums. I have gotta, you know, I'm gonna, you know, it's funny because we were just talking about how, like, nostalgia clouds your judgment of things, but I would have to say that my personal three favorite albums have gotta be in, it would be three is Graduation, two is My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and one is 808s and Heartbreak. That's it. It's gotta be a
very, very good example of the nostalgia effect.
But it's just, I mean, personally, like I said, those things have resonated with me the most and have stuck with me. So it's not necessarily, if I had to make a list of the best, objectively the best Kanye albums, maybe it would be different. I don't know. But for my personal taste, those are the three that I go back to the most.
Yeah, they offer something that I think it's hard to find from, I mean, not only other Kanye albums, but just other albums in general. Like, it's hard to find another Graduation. It's hard to find another 808s. Like, good luck finding an album like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Yeah, like, anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. Well, so that brings us to your last call, where you get, you know, 10 seconds, 10 minutes, however long you want of uninterrupted time to talk on anything that you want to talk about. It can be Kanye, it can be a movie that you recently saw and hated, it could just be shouting some people out. So this is your time. Thank you for joining us, Chris. Enjoy.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and shout out to all the great people at Genius who employ me to write about music. I don't know. I mean, Kanye's obviously had a big impact on my life, and I think a big impact on a lot of people's lives. And even as he's evolved and changed as an artist, and maybe is doing things that people don't necessarily agree with anymore, I think that the catalog of music remains very, it's what it is, you know, it's undeniable. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. My random thoughts is that one of my favorite Kanye verses of all time is his guest feature on Nicki Minaj's Blazin'. I don't know why, but I think that that's like I love that that feature so much, and I feel like I need to shout that out because I love that song. And yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see where things go from here. Cautiously optimistic, but we'll see. That's all I got. And they ask me, I tell them. Raise your glasses to the sky. Yeah.